One way we lead in life is by helping others develop faith and testimony. In a world where it seems more and more individuals are questioning their faith, Leading Saints has put together the Questioning Saints Virtual Summit, an online resource that many have found extremely helpful. Just text the word LEAD to 474747, and we'll send you more information about the Questioning Saints Virtual Summit. Welcome back to the Leading Saints podcast. This is Kurt Frankum, your host once again. Now, if you're new to Leading Saints, this is a podcast where we talk all things leadership in the context, in the Latter-day Saint context. And we strive to help every individual in the gospel be better prepared to lead, whether it's in the church, out of the church, in the PTA, in the local school board, on the local city council, whatever it is, we want to help individuals be better prepared to lead in the Latter-day Saint context. Now, this interview is an important one. Obviously, we try and leave no topic undone, or we want to talk about everything. We want you as a leader to be prepared and have unique perspectives to address the most difficult situations. And one of those, which seems to be more and more prevalent, unfortunately, is the concept of suicide and individuals dying by suicide. And it's heartbreaking when you hear these stories. And I'm sure many listening today have maybe experienced that with a family member, a loved one, a youth in your ward. I mean, it just is heartbreaking. And so we're not going to accomplish it all through this one episode, but I want to start creating content around this concept of suicide prevention. And I recently had the opportunity to go to Meridian, Idaho, and interact with the Coltrane family, Corey and Kristen Coltrane, who Corey's probably running on his treadmill right now. I'm encouraging you on, Corey, run, keep running. You're doing great. And Kristen was awesome to meet as well, Corey's wife. And they've been such a support and been contributed to Leading Saints in ways that you may never know, but I'm so grateful for them and their family and all that they've done for Leading Saints. And one of those is this episode. I had the opportunity to sit down with Kristen Coltrane and talk about suicide prevention. She has a psychology background and has been going around throughout the I guess they call it Treasure Valley in Boise area, and doing some simple trainings for wards, for stakes, whomever requests it, about suicide prevention. And she's going to school, working on her master's degree to become a therapist and to really contribute in this area, which she's going to do so much good. And so I sat down with her and we kind of walked through some of those points and principles that individuals should know and understand. And it is phenomenal, a good starting point to hopefully inspire you as leaders to bring in some local experts in your area and do some more in-depth training around this concept, so all of us are better and more prepared to identify individuals that might be headed towards suicide or thinking of suicide. What do we do in those scenarios? How do we talk to them? What do we say? What resources do we need to know about? And we cover a lot of that. So it's a good one. It's a heavy one, but a topic that needs to be discussed. So here is my interview with Kristen Coltrane. Today, I'm in Meridian, Idaho with Kristen Coltrane. How are you, Kristen?
I'm great. Thank you.
Good. I got an email yesterday from a guy that says you should stop asking people how they are in this first year episode. But it's not like I really want you to go into all the dark places of your life right now. But it's just a greeting. Anyways,
right.
Here we are. And this is a tough episode to do, but it's a necessary one that we need to do. And I'm glad coming up here to Idaho that we connected and we're able to talk about this, which is suicide prevention. So, and you have been going around in this area with different stakes and state councils, ward councils, whomever is wanting more information about suicide prevention. And you've been helping with that, right?
I have.
Yeah. And so what's your background? Like why did you get so lucky to do these important trainings?
Well, honestly, it wasn't something that I was looking toward. It's just kind of been something that I've been guided to do. I have been working for the Idaho Suicide Prevention Hotline as an intern. Before that, I got my bachelor's degree in psychology, and I started working on my master's degree in clinical social work so that I can be a therapist. And while I was working at the hotline, they asked me if I wanted to do my internship there. And it just so happened that right before my internship started, the Brethren sent out a letter and they were asking us if we are asking us to become more educated on suicide. And so I took that information to my supervisor at the hotline, and they were super excited about doing some outreach with faith organizations. And then I went to my stake president and asked if he would be interested in doing something like that. And he really was, but he told me that it needed to come from me, or it needed to come from a member of the church. And I'm the only member of the church that does any kind of outreach at the hotline. So that became my job.
Yeah. In this area, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah. In this area. Yeah. Yeah. So of course, yeah, I'm sure in Utah, there's a few members of the church down there.
Yeah, sure. But
in Idaho, I was the only one that is involved in outreach at all. And nice. Actually, there aren't very many of us who work there.
Nice. So. And this letter that you're referring to, it's in the slides that you gave me here, that in August 9th of 2018. So not even a year ago.
Right.
So if leaders out there want to check their database for that, and it's short enough, it says members of the church everywhere are invited to take an active role within their communities to minister to those who have thought of suicide or who are grieving a loss. Please review the enclosed resource called Preventing Suicide and Responding After a Loss with your stake or ward council. Discuss with them ways to share the information with other ward members. Additional resources, including new videos and articles, are available at suicide.lds.org, which is now suicide.churchofjesuschrist.org. The Ensign, Liahona, and New Era magazines are also have published articles about suicide each September over the past few years. So essentially, the church is saying we need to be a little more proactive in this effort. We can't just not talk about it, hope it never happens, because when it does happen, there's just, you just regret that there's something more you could do or better training put in place. So this effort or this encouragement comes directly from the church, from our leaders.
It does. And I don't know if everybody knows this, but there is an entire section of churchofjesuschrist.org that is about suicide.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've got it pulled up here. I don't know if I've got it on the wrong day, but every link I click is sort of a dead link. So hopefully by the time that you're going there, you can go to the suicide prevention and ministering site at suicide.churchofjesuschrist.org. So, and I want to just put a caveat in here as we go through this, that, you know, there's a lot of episodes on Leading Saints that people can listen to and be like, wow, that was a well-rounded discussion. I learned some things, and you can move forward and take action based on some of those principles that were talked about. This one, we really want, I mean, this is such a sensitive topic, and there's going to be so many diverse resources in whatever state or country you're in, that it's really important that this is sort of, we wanted to just inspire you with some facts and some ideas about how to effectively bring this discussion to your ward or stake, and then encourage you to go out and reach out to local experts that can come in and do a more robust, comprehensive training, rather than, oh, I heard a podcast, so we're set. You know, let's just pass that podcast around the stake. You know, then we'll be set, which of course I'd love you to pass this podcast around, but that's, the intent isn't to be a all encompassing training, right? So
exactly. And I'm hoping that people are going to look for the resources in their area that are going to help them to be able to help the people in their congregations. So
yeah. Well, should we talk about some statistics? I mean, it's one of those things that I think everybody has this feeling like, man, it seems like I'm hearing about suicide more, and it's unfortunate, but it can always feel like someone else's, it's happening somewhere else or another family. And that's probably how every family happens, until it happens in their family, because a lot of times they don't see it coming. So where do we start with statistics, understanding just how intense this issue is?
Okay, let's start with, in the US, it's actually the 10th leading cause of death.
Oh, man.
But it's the second leading cause of death for ages 10 to 24, which is kind of a scary thought.
Yeah.
And also, so we're specific to Idaho, but Idaho is ranked as the fifth highest suicide rate in the nation. And Utah is number six, right behind us. And Idaho is actually 40% higher than the national average. So those top 10 are usually in the western states, but there's West Virginia over there is one of the top 10 as well.
Hmm.
So
something about the Western United States.
Well, there's a couple of reasons for that, or reasons that people think it is that people in the Western U.S. are a little bit more stoic, that they're not willing to talk about their problems as much as they would anywhere else. And then also that they have more lethal means.
Mm.
So if you're living in the other parts of the U.S., there's a lot less guns that are in the other parts of the U.S. than there are in the Western U.S. Mm-hmm. And so,
yeah. And so nonetheless, I mean, the statistics show that it's increasing. It's, and I'm sure, and there's no like one variable or two or three variables. It's probably a mix of things, but I know technology can also play a role in social media. you know, especially with the youth. I mean, that demographic said 10 to 24. Is that right?
That 10 to 24. But yeah. The leading age for death by suicide would be middle-aged men. So it's not really the youth, but youth have become more, they have become higher statistics lately. Yeah. So,
yeah. And you mentioned, you know, you say death by suicide. I think growing up, I remember everybody referring to it as committed suicide, but that has maybe a negative connotation to it. And so is that sort of the going, like the direction that people use is using that death by suicide?
Yes. So committed, like you said, is a negative connotation. It's mm-hmm. something that we think about when you're committing a sin or you're committing a crime, right? And so we want to call it dying by suicide mm-hmm. or just saying, if we were asking the question, do you want to die of suicide? Do mm-hmm. you want to suicide? Sometimes people just say suicide, not mm-hmm. even say the dying.
It's almost like a verb. Yeah. And just also what I was going to say, as far as referring to it, like that you're thinking of suicide. I mean, suicide's a direct and helpful term to use. You don't have to dance around that term at all. Right. And we're going to get into other ways that.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. So the next, let's move it maybe more into the context of a church leader that may be listening, whether a bishop or even a family member that sees a loved one, you know, again, this the teenage years are in that range of ages where this is most common. So as far as treating this, because we live in a culture where, of course, or in a mortality where there's a lot of trials that happen. And I've got trials, you got trials, everybody's got trials. And these trials can stimulate all personal growth. They can bring us closer to our Savior, and they push us towards prayer and scripture. And I think in general, everybody's getting to the point, at least I hope, getting to the point as far as anything related to mental illness, we know that, you know, this isn't just a kneel down and pray it away type of situation, right? And so, and you use this concept as far as, you call it the shattered bone approach or right. perspective. Maybe right. expand on that.
Okay. So when I do my presentations, I'm speaking with leaders, and I love to be able to ask them, what would you do if you had a member of your congregation that came to you with a crushed bone? I hate it when there's a orthopedic surgeon in the audience, and that's happened quite a few times, unfortunately. Uh-huh. But for the most part, people will say, we'll get them to someone that can help them.
Yeah.
And so I try to make them think about, okay, well, what is the difference with mental health? Why do we feel like it's something that we're supposed to fix mm-hmm. and make better? It's not our job as a spiritual leader
yeah.
to do that.
Yeah. And the tricky thing is that, you know, obviously if they walked in with a crushed bone, you'd be able to see it and it's something physical that's happening. But sometimes when it's physical in the mind, it's hard to see. So you don't know if the person's just having a really bad Sunday or if there's mental illness happening, right? So these are some things you just have to be sensitive about, and which leads us to some of the questions that might be appropriate to asking. But yeah, just the fact that we can't treat it like just another trial, right?
Right.
That they need to just, you know, hold on and get through and it'll all be good, right?
Yeah. Well, I think that you have been a little bit more educated, because that's not always the case in the church. There are a lot of leaders who will still say, you need to pray more, you need to go to the temple more, you need to have more faith, and this trial will be taken from you. But honestly, if you have depression or mental illness, then you need to get the help that a professional to come and help you.
And if that feeling, I think if maybe if there's a stake leader that sees that happening in their stake, like that's why it's so crucial to bring that expert in to do the training and sort of bring some of these thoughts to the surface. Like, oh, okay, so maybe that one interaction and that other one, I probably could have handled better, and kind of rethink their approach and being more sensitive to some of these warning signs, right?
Yeah, I agree.
So what does the church in general tell us about suicide?
Well, that section on suicide is really great. So I super recommend that to people. There is a video with Elder Renlin, and he says just exactly what we were just talking about. He says, if you ask someone about suicide and they say yes, he says, now this is beyond that they need to read the scriptures or pray more fervently or exercise more faith. Those things will become important, but right now you need more help. And I love that they're kind of debunking some of the things that, you know, are just in our Mormon culture. It's not necessarily that we've heard that we have to tell people to pray more often if they're depressed, but that's just something that has happened over the years. And then I also love this quote that is on the website as well. And it says, when someone takes their own life, only God is able to judge their thoughts, their actions, and their level of accountability. Suicide need not be the defining characteristic of an individual's eternal life. And I love that because people who are contemplating suicide are in pain and they're not always thinking clearly.
Yeah.
And I know that our Heavenly Father takes those things into account.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so helpful. And I love that video, and you can find it on YouTube. We'll link to it on churchofjesuschrist.org. A great video to show even, you know, opening up a bishopric meeting, a ward council, and just start people, get the discussion going, and then saying, hey, guess what? Next week, we're having a person come in and to teach us more about this. But the church has addressed these things, debunked some misconceptions that have maybe been lingering. Mm-hmm. And hopefully that's setting a foundation for us to have more open conversations about this.
Absolutely.
So what, to me, I think, you know, this question, why do people want to die by suicide? And I just think, well, there's just a huge mental illness that's happening, but there's maybe, I guess we can't look at it so superficially. We have to look at maybe more detailed reasons that people, you know, the process, the thought process they're going through, their social circumstances, their religious circumstances, whatever, to really understand why people die of suicide. It's not just because they've gone crazy, right? There's much more to it. So why do people die of suicide?
Okay. Well, I'm going to actually take my information from Thomas Joyner, who is a leading researcher in suicide. He actually wrote an entire book called Why Do People Die of Suicide? And it's extremely interesting. But the three reasons that he comes up with are the lack of feeling connected, a lack of belonging, and feeling like a burden. And I just feel like those three things really kind of encompass everything. Not absolutely everything, but almost everything. So if we look at those three things, I think this is one of the things that I love to talk about when I do my presentations. I like to make sure that they take these three things to their ward council and say, okay, so-and-so is struggling. What kind of thing do you think it is here that they're struggling with? What one of these three reasons? So again, it's a lack of feeling connected, a lack of belonging, and feeling like a burden. And then I kind of open it up for discussion on why do you think the church is a good place for suicide prevention? So I'm going to ask you that.
So I would say, obviously, you can find great community in most wards. Obviously, every Sunday we connect, not only connect, but we feel that we connect through the Spirit, hopefully, that it's an uplifting place to be. Hopefully that connection leads to belonging. You know, I belong to the Church of Jesus Christ, the Latter-day Saints, right? The old song.
Yeah, sing that for us.
Yeah, I'll go right ahead. And then, you know, feeling like a burden, sometimes there's positive messages where you think, you know, I have a purpose here in this world. I'm a child of God. And hopefully that's the message that's coming across. But there some of those would be more difficult than others. But
Right. So, and then some of the other things are that we have resources, right? Mm-hmm. And we also have made a commitment to help each other and to bear one another's burdens. So that should help us to feel connectedness and belonging, right? Okay, so now let's be devil's advocate here for a second. Uh-huh. Why would the church be not so good for some people when it comes to those three things?
Yeah, I would say there's, you know, as far as connection and belonging, I mean, if somebody maybe interprets and sees some doctrines differently, or, you know, I think of the LGBT community that, you know, they're trying to reconcile this part of themselves and they think, man, this is all about, you know, families or even singles, right, in the church that, you know, I'm supposed to get married, I can't get married, and it's all about families and, you know, I'm surrounded by happy families, I want a happy family, and so they can feel disconnected and feel like, you know what, at the end of the day, I don't think I belong here. I want to belong here, but I don't.
Right.
And then, especially if they're going through different trials or especially if they wrestle with some level of mental illness, they can easily feel like a burden. You know, I'm always the person people are coming, bringing the casserole over to, or I'm always the person that needs the help. You know, I wish I could help more, but I'm just a burden to this ward or to my family or those things. So, and that's the tricky thing. It's not like the gospel solves everything. You just have to plug in and you're good to go. Like there's a balance here that it could go either way. You can feel super connected or not, right?
That's so true. I like that you brought up LGBTQ because if you look at that, okay, so feeling connected, how are they going to feel connected if they feel like ashamed of how they're feeling? Or how are they going to feel like they belong if they can't, like they can't go to the temple, right?
Yeah.
So, or how about feeling like a burden? I mean, they have all three of these things that could be affecting them. And so it's important that we, you know, just put our arms around everybody who comes to church. But yeah, you had a lot of really good answers. And I think another couple of them are that our leaders aren't necessarily trained in counseling.
Right.
In some churches they are, but in our church they aren't. We're all lay leaders and we're all just doing the best that we can with what we know. My favorite thing to say is that when we know better, we do better. Mm-hmm. And our Heavenly Father needs us to do better. So yeah. I'm just glad that people are listening to this podcast so yeah. that they can learn a little bit more. And hopefully they're going to get some more education from here.
Right. Yeah. And as people bring in experts or listen to this podcast or others, the point isn't to become that expert or to become that therapist. Right. Obviously there's yeah. professional training, but it's so relieving as a leader to know that I can hand this off to a professional. I just need to know, how do I handle this with kid gloves so that I can effectively hand it off to the professional and get the individual help. So anything else with why do people die of suicide and some of the...
Well, we can kind of go into the risk factors.
Yeah, the risk factors.
If you'd like to.
Yeah.
So a prior suicide attempt is the most important risk factor for suicide in the general population. But after that, it would be substance abuse disorders and a diagnosable mental health disorder. And then there's a few more that I can mention. So if they have access to lethal means like guns or pills, family history of suicide or violence, a lack of social support, all of these things kind of go back to that connectedness and mm-hmm. belonging, right? A loss of a family member or friend, especially if by suicide. So if you have a history of suicide in your family, that could be a huge risk factor. Another thing that I think is super interesting is that people who have a desensitization to pain, such as like EMTs or coroners or physicians or dentists or military, they're all high risk.
Yeah, I've heard that like dentists are really high risk for suicide.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? Mm. I don't exactly know why that is, but yeah, they are at high risk.
And so with risk factors, when you say like if a family member, somebody else has committed suicide, is it like because there's maybe a genetic thing in there, or is it, I'm just thinking like, is there a copycat thing going on here? Like if a youth in the ward dies by suicide, does that put the rest of the youth a little bit higher risk of, yes. of maybe doing that? It's not yes. just a genetic thing.
Right. We call that a cluster. That actually happens quite often where one will die of suicide and then others will follow. And it's not that they put the idea in their mind. It's just that those who were thinking about it now have the courage mm-hmm. to do it because someone else
yeah.
was able to.
In their mind, they think, oh, that mm-hmm. that was an exit for them. Maybe right. I should take that more seriously, which is right. unfortunate, right?
Yes.
So, and then there's a difference between risk factors and warning signs. So risk factors are, these are things to be aware of. And you think, okay, this individual may be higher risk for thinking about suicide. Mm-hmm. And then when it gets to some warning signs coming to the surface, then that sort of escalates how much attention should be shown to that individual.
Exactly. So let's talk about those warning signs a little bit. I'm not going to say all of them because there are so many.
Yeah, I bet.
We're going to post it on your website, but the inability to sleep or sleeping all the time, that would be one. Changes in weight or eating habits, neglecting school or personal appearance, chronic headaches, stomach aches, fatigue, suddenly more religious or suddenly not religious at all when they were before. Those things can be warning signs. And we have to remember that just one of these things alone isn't necessarily going to indicate
we hope that
somebody's suicidal.
A lot of people become more religious, right?
Right. But that's sometimes a lot of people do. And a lot of people decide not to be religious and they're not necessarily suicidal.
Yeah.
So we just need to remember that, you know, one of those things alone isn't necessarily, but if we put them together, that might just might be a cause for concern that we might want to look and see if maybe they're thinking about it.
Yeah. Awesome. And then the next sort of level is the triggering events where maybe there are some risk factors present. There's some maybe warning signs coming to the surface, but then it just takes that event, triggering event that then sends them down to the very dark place.
Right. So most often people are not dying of suicide because somebody bullied them one time, right?
Yeah.
But that might be a triggering event. It might have caused them after so many other things, or maybe a long-term bullying that was going on, or maybe a breakup or losing a job. Those kinds of things can be a triggering event, but that isn't necessarily the reason why they were thinking of suicide in the first place. They might have had other things going on or some kind of mental illness or substance abuse disorder that brought them to that point. And then that triggering event happened and then they decided to go ahead and follow through.
Yeah. And so there may be, you know, you get as a leader, you may get a phone call, you know, so-and-so lost his job today. He's really taking it hard. You know, obviously connecting with that individual and just being more aware, and then leading to asking some of those questions. We haven't talked about the question yet.
We haven't.
Is this a good place to do that?
No. Nope.
Okay, we'll keep going. I don't want to push you too fast here. So any other, as far as triggering events or that we should be aware of?
No, it can really be anything, honestly.
Yeah.
It can be anything. So we don't want to just put that in a box there, but just know that, you know, sometimes people feel really guilty because that one thing happened, and it's not necessarily
blame on that one event.
That one thing wasn't necessarily what happened. It was more than that.
Yeah. And I think this is good to just talk through, because it's not about the event, or it's not about, you know, isolating all those who've lost their jobs or gone through a breakup and really putting them on suicide watch to some degree, but to just know that a lot of times there's warning signs, risk factors, and then that triggering event is sometimes what just brings everything to the surface and makes them do the unthinkable.
Absolutely. You
know? All right. Where are we going next? As far as prevention, is suicide preventable? Is that?
Yes.
Okay.
Actually, it is preventable. And that's why we're here today. So people routinely survive deep depression and suicidal thoughts. And then that basic instinct to survive is ever present. In that book by Thomas Joyner, he talks about people who jumped off of the Golden Gate Bridge and survived it. Hmm. And there are actually people who survived it.
Wow, that's remarkable.
And they will say that they didn't do it the first time. They didn't actually jump off the bridge that first time. They actually had to go a couple times to get up the courage to do it. So their body is telling them, don't do this, even though their mind is saying you should jump off a bridge. So, and then suicidal people usually survive because somebody identifies what's happening and gets them the help that they need. Mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting to know that, you know, like we talked about, most of the people who complete suicide have had some kind of a mental health or substance abuse disorder, and those disorders are absolutely treatable.
Yeah.
And we know in the church that we have help for substance abuse disorders, but we don't have necessarily help for mental health.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's remarkable some of the, you know, early on, you know, when there's maybe minor risk factors and warning signs, when, you know, a change of medication or something just sort of pulls them out of that funk that they're in, and they're able to cope with day-to-day life better. When those trigger events happen, they're able to reconcile and move through them, right?
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up, because even though that's not what we're really talking about right now,
sure. That's
a really good thing to know, is that reason why there's a label of suicide as a risk factor for medications is because when people start taking that medication, sometimes they're so deep in a depression or whatever their mental illness is, that when they start taking the medication and start feeling better, that's when they follow through.
Interesting.
Is what they've been thinking about. And so if they start feeling better, that doesn't mean, okay, we're out of the woods. Yeah. We need to just leave them alone now. That's usually the time when they come out of that funk. In fact, at the hotline, we've noticed, and I think this is kind of universal, that, you know, after we've gotten through the winter, when you think that it's the worst time, especially in the Boise Valley, we have inversions. And so it's really foggy and, you know, just so depressing around here, especially for people that have seasonal disorders. So when it starts getting nicer outside is when the suicide levels rise. Hmm. So, you know, March through May, it starts rising, instead of being like in December, when you would think it would be like around the holidays and when people are really depressed. They are depressed then, but when they start coming out of that funk is when they follow through.
Interesting. Because you think that would restore hope or give you, you know, a new reasons to wake up in the morning. And interesting. That's
exactly.
All right. Should we move on to how do we know if they're suicidal? I mean, we've talked about some of these risk factors, warning signs, and triggering events, but
we don't know for sure.
Yeah, we don't know.
Just by watching somebody, right?
Yeah.
So the most important thing is to listen to what they're saying. Sometimes people will give direct verbal clues and they'll say something like, I'm going to kill myself. That doesn't happen very often.
Yeah.
And that doesn't even happen at the hotline. Like when we answer the phone, they very rarely will say something like, I decided to kill myself. But a lot of times they will use indirect verbal clues like, I'm just tired and I can't go on, or my family would be better off without me, or who cares if I'm dead anyway, or I just want out. I won't be around much longer, or pretty soon you won't have to worry about me. And all of those things are called indirect verbal clues. They also are called invitations. Hmm. And we call them invitations because they're inviting you to ask them more.
Yeah. Yeah, because they wouldn't just say that hoping you wouldn't know, want to know about this. I mean, it's a cry for help.
Exactly. Right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
So, and this is interesting because, you know, in the context, I remember being a bishop, sometimes I didn't know exactly, early on, I didn't know exactly. I thought, man, I think I'm nervous to send this person home alone, or, you know, I probably need to do something. And so early on, I remember like being indirect, or I'd see, say things like, do you want to hurt yourself? Have you had thoughts of hurting yourself? But you give the great advice as you go do these trainings, like you need to be as direct as possible. And that is, that's so helpful to be direct, right?
Exactly. Yeah. We just want to ask them straight out, are you thinking of suicide? And I think the most indirect way that we can say it would be like, we would take one of those warning signs that you've noticed, and we'd say something like, I've noticed that you've been giving things away. That's one of the warning signs. Sometimes when people start giving things away, they're thinking of suicide. Are you thinking of suicide? Mm-hmm. So just taking that warning sign, or just letting them know, I've noticed this about you and I'm a little bit worried and I'm wondering if you're thinking about suicide.
Yeah.
So just being as direct as we can is important. I know on that churchofjesuschrist.org uh-huh. website, Elder Renlund says to go ahead and ask straight out, are you thinking of harming yourself? But that's not direct enough. We want to make sure that we say the word suicide or killing yourself, because we want them to also internalize what it is they're thinking about doing.
Yeah.
It's not just harming themselves, it's killing yeah. themselves.
Yeah. And people, I mean, as a bishop, I was introduced to the whole concept of people that cut themselves, right? And they're in no way suicidal, but it's a way that they cope with different things. And I don't understand it completely, but people do that, right?
They do. And for people who cut themselves, it's not harming themselves. It's actually helping them to release pain.
Yeah.
So they're actually feeling relief from that. They're not hurting themselves.
Yeah. They obviously need some help, but it's not.
They do. Yeah. They do need some help, but that doesn't mean that they're feeling suicidal.
Yeah. Because I can see someone who's maybe done that, maybe they feel shameful. Then their leader says, have you thought about hurting yourself? And they say, well, yeah, because they're thinking just cutting. And the bishop's sort of freaking out like, oh my goodness, right. And you may get them too much help or the wrong type of help. And so it's good to just be direct. Right?
Yeah. And the other thing is that sometimes when you're asking if you're going to harm yourself, they're thinking, well, no, I'm not going to harm myself. I'm going to kill myself. And I'm going to feel really good about it because I'm...
Yeah. It's not going to hurt at all.
I'm going to lose all that pain. Yeah. I'm not going to have this pain anymore.
Yeah. Another warning sign that I found just interesting when I read Jane Clayson Johnson's book, Silent Souls Weeping, and I interviewed her, but she talked about when she went through her depressed state, she started to pick out other women that she would like her husband to marry. Yeah. And that was so intriguing to me that I thought, you know, it's not like they don't care about their families. They feel like they'll be better without me. And in fact, not only that, I'm going to find somebody who will be better to take my place, you know? So that, I thought that was an interesting.
True. People do say that quite a bit, even on the hotline, they'll say, I think my family would be better off without me.
Yeah.
And they'll say, you know, I'm a burden. Mm-hmm. I'm a burden to them because I've been going through this mental anguish, or I've been going through this chronic pain for so long that I think they'll just be better off without me.
Yeah, it's too bad. But I even talked with a bishop last night. I did fireside in Nampa, and the bishop there had received your training, and he talked about how it's so empowering as a bishop to know that I can ask them, have you thought about suicide? Like, I can be very direct. And he says he's already used it a couple times, you know, in his role since you did that training. And just that little thing that can help you as a leader. And we won't go into maybe the whole, I guess I want to talk about when they ask that question or when somebody, and I was this bishop many times. I have somebody in my office who is in a tough spot. I've asked the question, have you thought about suicide? They say yes. Mm-hmm. And this may push us into our resource discussion, but what are we supposed to do in that moment to make sure that, you know, we've done our part as a resource?
Okay. Well, I think the first and most important thing is to make sure that you listen. Listening is the most important thing because we have to give them the opportunity to tell us what it is that they're thinking about. And we can also kind of gauge from what they're saying, how close they are. If it's like an imminent thing, if it's something that they're thinking about doing right away, or if they're just having these thoughts and they're kind of passive. So there's a lot more to suicide prevention training. And of course, we're not going to have time to do that, nor do we have the resources to do that here. So I do recommend that people get more training, but I just want to really reiterate how important it is to let them tell their story. And I will also tell you that at the hotline, we have an 80-20 rule where we only talk 20% of the time and we make sure that the other person talks 80% of the time. And sometimes that requires us to be quiet. Hmm. And sometimes that requires us to just let them sit in silence because they're thinking about what they're what they're really doing. And sometimes it becomes more real to them when they say it out loud. They've been thinking these thoughts for so long, but they haven't necessarily voiced them.
Yeah.
And so we need to let them really think about what it is that they're doing.
And I love that point because as a leader, it's easy that, I mean, when you're in these interactions, it can feel very awkward. You don't know, they may not want to talk. And so you're not sure how to get them talking. And so then you sort of open your scriptures and just sort of speak at them. And well, let me share you this scripture that makes me feel good. And all right, next scripture. And then it can be very awkward. So just kind of being in that state, I'm going to be okay with silence for a little bit. I'm going to ask some empathizing questions and just try and understand where they're coming from. And hopefully that like, gets them talking. Right?
Exactly. And so now we're going to kind of talk about those resources.
Yeah.
And what I call them is like the first, second, and third, and fourth line of defense. First of all, would be the hotline. Mm-hmm. So not everybody knows this, but there is a national hotline in America anyway. And that national hotline is based on where your area code is. So if I was in Utah, but I called the hotline because I have a 208 number, it would come to Idaho and I would be directed to the people in Idaho. So it's good to know that national number, mm-hmm. but it's also good to know the backdoor number for your hotline.
Yeah.
Just because you might have somebody in your congregation who doesn't have the same area code. And it's kind of nice to just talk to someone who is in your area so that you can get resources for your area.
Yeah, they're familiar with, because it's different from state to state to country to country.
Yes.
Yeah.
The hotline is so awesome because you can call as a third party. And we talk to third party people all the time that will call and say, I am worried about my child or I'm worried about whatever.
That's helpful. You don't have to like egg them on to like, no, you should call us. No, really call it. Yeah. You can call them yourself.
You can call them yourself. And if you're sitting with someone and they don't want to call, you can call that number while they're sitting there with you and they can help walk you through what needs to happen for that person. And they're going to be able to help you with all the other steps that I'm not able to teach you today. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is just having them call and maybe you can just say, here, I'll help you call this number. You talk to them and I can walk out of the room or I can stay here with you, whatever you prefer. And then they'll have somebody who's helping them to make a safety plan or get to where they need to go so that they can get the help that they need.
Yeah. And I know, obviously, the main point, obviously, you need to go to Google wherever you're at and you know, type in suicide prevention with your state or whatever country or province or and that information will come up. I know in Utah, there's a crisis line, a mobile, which is maybe the mobile outreach team is different than a crisis or the suicide prevention line, right?
It is.
Okay. Yes. And the suicide prevention is more like, we're going to have a conversation. I'm not necessarily going to send somebody out to rescue you or, but unless they'll know, you know, if it gets to that point, do that. But the first level is that just the prevention line, the suicide prevention line.
Right? Yes. Because those people are all trained. They're manned by trained volunteers. They all have a supervisor who's watching over them, making sure and giving you the resources that you need. So you're going to make sure that you're talking to someone who knows what they're doing.
Yeah. And you know, I often give this soapbox speech when it comes to the legal line, because all church leaders have a legal line where they can call directly to the church office building, talk with an attorney. If anything, you know, in their interactions and conversation comes up, so they're not sure, they need some legal advice. So I would wear out that number. Even if I was the silliest situation, I remember calling sometimes being like, I know this probably isn't a big deal, but I'm just calling just to see if I'm missing something. And so I can see that there may be somebody that came into your office. You know, there's not a lot of warning signs, not a lot going on. You feel pretty good with them going home, but maybe as they leave, just sit down and call the number and just say, okay, this is what just happened. I'm a bishop or I'm a Relief Society president. I just had this conversation. Am I missing anything? And they may say, no, I think it'll be all right. Maybe just get calm tomorrow or do those things. Cause just wear these numbers out. They do not, you don't not get fees for calling when you shouldn't call. Like they want help, right?
Yes, absolutely. Every one of us would welcome any call from a bishop. Just, we would love it.
Yeah.
It would be great to help somebody to help their congregant.
And I remember, and this is maybe the next levels is the next lines of defenses, but there's one individual in my ward who had, later we found out he was dealing with some serious mental illness, but had all sorts of affairs, and his wife found out of these affairs. So I got pulled into this as the bishop. Suddenly he took off, and we didn't know where he was. So I'm out there looking in the neighborhood for this individual. I find him, I put him in my car, and I start driving, and I'm thinking, I have no idea. I don't know what I do with it, because he had talked about suicide, wow. You know, and I thought, I don't know where to take this guy. Like, I had no idea. I never had to deal with this situation. So I called a random therapist that I knew, and she said, you take him to the ER. I'm like, oh, okay, I'll take him to the ER, right? And so even with those situations, if you just don't know even what to do, they know all the resources and all the steps. Just call them and ask what may feel like to you as a dumb question, because they have the answers, and it isn't a dumb question, because these are new situations.
Yeah. No, and so in Idaho, we have an awesome... We don't have a lot of things in Idaho, but we do have this. And so it's called a community crisis center. We have 5 of them in Idaho, and they are so awesome because they're 24/7. They're absolutely free. Somebody can go there for 23 hours and 59 minutes, walk out and walk back in if they need to. And the reason is just because they are an outpatient facility and they're not allowed to keep you overnight. But they have counselors and social workers and nurses there. And they will check to make sure that you're physically okay. And then they will work with you to get you the help that you need. So that they'll do some counseling, you know, on crisis counseling on the spot, but they aren't like a long-term counseling. Yeah. But they will give you resources for counselors in your area that fit within your budget. They'll also give you resources for psychiatrists or doctors. And that the social workers actually help you to find something that, you know, will fit your insurance or whatever. So they're a great resource here. And I know, you know, we're kind of the bottom of the bucket. Like I said, we're the fifth highest in the nation on suicide. So if we have that, then I'm sure that everywhere else you've got even better resources. And you said that you have a mobile.
Yeah. So in Utah, as a bishop, you become quite familiar with UNI, which is the University Neuropsychiatric Institute, which is at the University of Utah. So if you're in Salt Lake area, this is a great resource. They have a crisis hotline, which you absolutely need to put in your phone if you're in that area, which is 801-587-3000. And I called that several times. Many times they'll send out a unit. So I remember having somebody in my bishop's office having a very tough time. I just stayed with them. I explained to them, you know, I asked them the question, are you thinking of suicide? They said, yes. We talked further, tried to listen. And then I said, you know, I just want to make sure I get you all the help that you need, because I care about you so much, you know? And so I called the crisis line. They sent out a team. They came in, and again, they sat with us and talked a while. And then I think on a few instances, you know, they felt good with talking through a plan. They let the individual go home. Other instances, they took them and went to the uni to get more help. So it's awesome resources.
Sounds like you did everything right. You didn't even need me back then.
Well, you
good
know,
job.
There were probably several I was learning on, but nonetheless, like to me, it gets in a stage where, okay, you have this individual. They said they have thought about suicide. Mm-hmm. You can't say, well, let's talk next Wednesday and we'll get you some help. You've got to act then.
Right.
And so if they agree to like go with you, then this like say, well, why don't we drive down the street and we'll go to this, you know, this facility and let's just talk about it with some professionals, right? Mm-hmm. So if they agree to go to you, this is the next step, right?
That is absolutely where I would go next. Yeah. And the reason is for a couple reasons. One, you're going to get help immediately. Mm-hmm. It's free, which is really nice. And the ER isn't free.
Yeah.
And oftentimes when you go to the ER, you have to wait quite a long time.
You said even days sometimes.
Even days. If they put you on a mental hold, then you're there until they get somebody to get you into another facility.
Because your heart's not stopped. They can put you in the corner and get to you when they start all the stopped hearts, right?
Exactly. Exactly. So it can be a really, not the greatest thing, but it's actually sadly the only choice when you have children that are under 18.
Yeah.
Because the crisis centers, at least in Idaho, the crisis centers only accept people over 18. Hmm. I know that there are some places, I don't think in Utah, but I know there are some places in the U.S. where they do have youth crisis centers, but they're very few and far between. Yeah.
And I would imagine if you're in a very rural area that maybe you don't have some of these resources down the street, then the ER is the place to take them.
That you have to go,
And if they agree to go with you, right?
If they agree.
Yeah.
So that brings us into the next
one. If they want, many times they won't agree, you know, I'm going to do this, or they may say, I'm not suicidal, but I had those cases where they didn't say I'm not suicidal, but I did not believe them, you know, so I didn't feel comfortable leaving them, but they wouldn't come with me.
Right.
So where do we go with there?
So in that case, then what we do is we call for a welfare check. And what that means is that we're going to call the non-emergency dispatch number for the police in your area and ask for a crisis intervention trained officer. Not everywhere will have one, especially in the rural areas, but most areas do, because they are trained to deflect things instead of making it a little bit worse, especially if somebody is combative and saying, no, I don't want to go to the ER. They're going to be able to come in and they're going to be able to assess whether or not they're suicidal. And if they feel that they are, then they will take them into the ER. And we absolutely use that as a last resort at the hotline because it is traumatic. They, at least here, for it's their policy to put them in handcuffs and right in the back of their car to get to the ER, and then they're on a mental hold. And that's just a really hard thing for somebody to have to go through if they're just thinking about suicide and they don't have a plan.
Yeah. Now they're in the back of a cop car in handcuffs.
And but I think the police understand that. And so if they do come out and they do a welfare check and the person does not seem like they're imminently suicidal, then they are probably going to leave them. And then in that case, once they've left them and the person's now mad at you because you've called this welfare check. So they're probably not going to talk to you about how they're feeling anymore.
Yeah.
So,
and that could be a triggering event for them.
I'm not going to say that you shouldn't do it though, because it is an imminent suicide that's coming up. Then we need to do that. I mean, what's the alternative?
Yeah, exactly. We got to do everything possible. And there's also, I love this point that you mentioned as far as asking for an officer who is trained.
Crisis intervention training.
That has that training, because you explained last night that many times police officers can get just, you know, they're out there to protect people and obviously from themselves as well, but, you know, to fight the bad guys, but then they've been called to the same home for four times. And then they're just sort of like, you know, why are we here again? And you know, bless their hearts, that's a tough job. But by having that person who has that training background, maybe they'd have more success with handling that situation.
Right? Exactly.
So ask for that. Mm-hmm. Cool. And that's, I always tell, especially bishops, to figure out what your local dispatch line is, the non-emergency phone number for the police. And of course you can call 911 as well, but, and put that in your phone and have it saved. There were several times, I remember there's an individual at church that got a little out of hand and I didn't know, you know, how to deal with it. And so I just called the non-emergency line, explained the situation. They sent an officer out and we handled it. Right. So it comes in handy, not in just in the suicide prevention, but in other areas that you don't want to just call 911 if it's really not an emergency, you know, somebody's dying or something's happening. But sometimes suicide prevention, it is in that emergency state. You got to call 911, get them there, right?
Yes.
All right. What other resources? Throw them at us here.
Yeah, let's talk about a couple other things. So when you call the National Suicide Hotline, you'll have an opportunity to dial 1 or 2. If you dial 1, and it'll tell you this on the recording, but if you dial 1, it'll take you to the veterans hotline. So for people that are military, they can talk to someone who knows exactly what they're going through, especially PTSD. So that's a really good resource. And then also for LGBTQ, there's the Trevor Project, and they have an 800 number as well. And they are a really good resource for LGBTQ+. And then I think when the Church of Jesus Christ.org suicide part is back up working a little bit better, it has a lot of resources for different nations for the 800 numbers. And so you can go in there and even tell them what language or whatever, but they have a lot of other resources. So like for Australia and Canada and everywhere else, just look up what is in your area, because I think there's a lot of great resources that can be local as well.
Yeah. And I promise you will thank yourself by looking up those numbers beforehand, not like in the moment, like, oh yeah, they told me to Google those. Just a minute, please, as I Google these, you know, just have them ready, have them in your phone, ready to go. And and being that a strong resource for them will give them confidence. Like, okay, I'm safe with this leader. Like, I'm sort of scared of where I'm at right now. I've thought about these things, but I feel much like he knows what to do. Like that feeling can be so helpful for people to feel.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So like I'm not sure how it would be everywhere else, but here I know the crisis centers are happy to take you on a tour.
Yeah.
So like, if, you know, I could just see a bunch of bishops and a stake president going and
good field
touring
trip, yeah.
one of them just to make sure that they know what they're telling people. I know the first time I sent someone to Pathways is what we have here. I went with her and I thought I was going to be able to go in with her. No, you're not allowed to go in. They just have to go in by themselves. They actually do a pat down and take your things and put them in a cubby. It's absolutely voluntary, but right. it was nice to know, you know, at that point, luckily this person wasn't scared of that, but other people are really scared of it, especially if they've been on a mental hold before. They're like, I don't want to have to be patted down and have all these things, you know, my things taken away or anything, because I want to be able to leave when I want to leave. And so they should know that that's always their option. But the reason why they do that is so that everybody inside is safe.
Yeah.
So it's just good to know what the practices are at the crisis centers in your area.
Yeah. Now that's so true. There's so many, I've talked about various field trips that are helpful to take, you know, going to the bishop's storehouse, going to the local, you know, prison. If you do visits, there's processes you need to be familiar with, and going to the local, you know, crisis center would be mm-hmm. great to take the bishopric, the ward council, and just get everybody familiar with that. But again, after the expert comes and does the training, that'd be it.
Exactly. So,
anything else we're missing that we haven't touched on?
I'm sure there's a lot of things that we're okay. missing, and that's why I just hope that people will get some more training.
Just an introductory episode exactly. to this tough conversation at times. So if somebody's in the Boise area and they want you to come speak and do the training, how would they get in touch with you?
I can give you my email address okay. and they can absolutely.
Okay. We'll put that on in the show notes and you can reach out to Kristen and get her in your stake. Or usually it starts like a bishop gets the idea and then the stake president gets wind. And then it's the stake president, they're the stake, and then the coordinating council. And then, you know, anyway, so.
Oh, there's one stake I've been to 4 times.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Just for different groups. And I love doing small groups and I don't mind doing large groups. So mm-hmm. it's great.
And just the technicalities of it. Is it usually like a Sunday evening thing, or what type of meetings have you done?
So I have done Sunday evenings. It seems like those are not as well, like not as many people come to them mm-hmm. as they do when we do the 6:30 and 7 a.m., which I hate a lot. But we do that on Sunday morning because that's when they're doing their meetings yeah. and they're all used to doing meetings at that time.
Yeah.
So it seems like I will get more people there at that time.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. And if you're elsewhere, just, you know, call LDS Family Services, talk, you know, send your feelers out in the state, call local therapists.
You can call your hotline.
The hotline.
They will
yeah.
tell
right.
you who they get their training.
That's
from
great. Like we need an expert to come out and do some training for a church group. Who is it going to be? And they yeah. will give you a list of people. That's great. Okay. Great advice. The last question I have is, you have, you know, ventured off in this world of, I mean, what a valiant effort to help educate individuals, especially in our church, about preventing suicide. How has that process made you a better disciple of Jesus Christ?
It has been an amazing experience for me. I've had so many times when the Spirit has told me where to go and how to do this. And that's why I know that it's something that Heavenly Father wants his leaders to know, especially. But one of the roles as a social worker is to be an advocate. And that has made me think about the role of our Savior Jesus Christ as an advocate as well. And he's already suffered for all of our weaknesses and sorrows. And I feel that when we're following his example, that we're also willing to love and care for his children as well. And I've learned so much that we all have struggles, and some people's struggles are hidden and we don't know about them. But our Heavenly Father does, and he will help us to know what we're supposed to do. And I'm so grateful that I've had the opportunity to do that.
That concludes my interview with Kristen Coltran. A big shout out to her for being so prepared, putting this information together that allows us to talk about it. Obviously, I hope at this point you have written several notes. You have some marching orders for some phone numbers to look up, some resources to hunt down, depending on what state or country that you're in, right? It's so crucial that you get prepared to answer some of these questions and that you have these resources readily available to communicate to individuals who are going through a very difficult time. We need to help them stay with us. It is crucial. And I know that that they can find the peace and happiness that they seek through professional counseling, through the gospel, through loved ones, through so many ways. We just have to help them in these tough moments and the darkest moments so they stay with us. If you know of anybody else I should reach out to around this concept, obviously there's a variety of experts, a variety of perspectives and approaches to this. That's probably worth its own virtual summit in the coming years, which we'll most definitely do. But if there's anybody else I should reach out to that you know, please go to leadingsaints.org/contact and send us that information and let us know who it is we need to talk to. And remember, text the word LEAD to 474747, and we'll send you more information about the Questioning Saints Virtual Summit.
It came as a result of the position of leadership which was imposed upon us by the God of heaven, who brought forth a restoration of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And when the declaration was made concerning the only true and living church upon the face of the earth, we were immediately put in a position of loneliness. The loneliness of leadership, from which we cannot shrink nor run away, and to which we must face up with boldness and courage and ability.